Shocker, no surprise on Brent Burns signing in San Jose.
I don't know that I'll agree with that. I thought they would try and get him done, but I didn't think it was a definite. So when Pierre Lebrun reported today that there had been significant progress made and that they were closing in, it definitely raised my eyebrow a little bit. I'm not going to say I knew that was coming because I didn't. I wondered what might happen. So, I mean, yeah, I have to say I don't really like the signing. I don't. It's this is 8 years for a 31-year-old player at $8 million. I think that is just nothing but trouble down the road. He's a good player, but he's 31 years of age. They're going to be paying him $8 million a season when he's 39? Like, I have a hard time with this one because it just for the length of the deal and the number, it just doesn't make sense. There's no way. I mean, he has achieved a higher level in the last 2.5 seasons than he ever has in his career before. He's always been a very good player, but he hasn't been the player he's been the last couple of seasons here. And what are the chances he's going to be able to hold even 2/3 of that together for the next 4 or 5 years, let alone 8?
You think he's going to fall off 33% in 4 years?
Well, guys, traditionally, when they get to 35, 36, 37, yeah, that's kind of what happens to most guys. I mean, that's, you're getting into your late 30s on an $8 million deal.
Well, what's funny, though, like when you look at Norris Trophy candidates, Ryan, like top end of defenseman, which was what Burns is right now, a lot of them, like you, Nick Lidstrom, Chris Pronger, like a lot of those guys, the wheels fall off the average player fast. But if you look at the elite guys, like who was the last elite defenseman who hit 35 and then it was just a train wreck? Like look at Brian Campbell at his age. He's still not a train wreck, right? So Dano Chara, who's I think closer to 40 now, you know, slowing down in the latter years of his career for sure. But I'm trying to think of who was the last like elite defenseman who at the age of 35 just kind of fell off the planet.
Well, Zdeno Chara has been, his game has been going downhill for 2+ years now, right? He's now 39. So from the age of basically 36-ish, it's been a bit of a decline for him. So, and he's not making $8 million a season.
About seven, I think.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just, like, it's kind of like this Lucic deal. We all kind of looked at it, the number of years and where his game was at and went, oh, man, what's it going to look like on the tail end of that deal? Now, Brent Burns is, he's a little bit different than Lucic, and that Lucic, you could make the argument, was kind of a little bit on the other side of it already compared to where he was when he was peaking. So the thing that makes this, Burns is peaking right now, which he's signing a contract at a time where he is peaking and never been better. And so he's got the team over a barrel. And 8 years at $8 million a season, starting at age 31, man, that's, I don't know, man. I don't know what that's going to look like in even 6 years. Because $8 million a year, that's a lot. And guys, I don't think many defensemen remain elite pass into the 36, 37, 38 range.
Yeah, like I can see the last
$8 million elite.
I can see the last 2 years being a concern. I think 4 years is too early to be a concern for Brent Burns unless he has a complete fall off. But this is a guy who seems like he finally got everything going now. And, you know, he skates very well in a skating man's game. That's kind of if you can skate as elite guy like Brian Campbell, who's not, I don't think, in Brent Burns' category, but for a guy who's always been a good skater, you look at his age and, you know, he's not falling off by any stretch of the imagination. He's obviously not as dominant, but if you're San Jose and you could lose Brent Burns for nothing, and then what do you do for the next 4 years?
Yeah, and thus is the problem, right? That's the difficulty in making it work at the NHL level is you sometimes have to figure out what to do with guys. And sometimes you have to make sacrifices long term. It's really hard for teams to let guys go, and really hard for. But listen, Steven Stamkos is a lot younger. And Steve Yzerman was not willing to do a deal that he thought would hamper his team in the years moving forward, regardless of how good Steven Stamkos was, regardless of what it would look like to potentially lose him for nothing, which he was kind of faced with.
Yeah, but Stamkos, isn't his cap hit $8.5
million? Well, that's exactly the point. He was not willing to give Stamkos a $12 million deal or an $11 million deal. Like, as good as Stamkos is, and he was way younger than Burns.
Yeah, but
Yzerman, one of the brightest GMs in the league, was not willing to overpay on a guy for too long if he thought it was going to hamper his team's ability to win down the road. Now, Burns and Stamkos are different. You're talking about a forward and a defenseman. But
yeah,
I would suggest $8 over $8 for a 31-year-old Brent Burns will hamper his team's ability to win moving forward, like down the road. And that's exactly the deal Yzerman wasn't willing to give somebody like Stamkos. So,
well, I would the difference there, I would argue Brent Burns right now is the most valuable player in San Jose moving forward over the next 3 or 4 seasons, where in Tampa Bay, I don't think Steven Stamkos was their clear MVP. Injuries, unfortunately, he had 64 points last season. You know, some would argue that Kucherov's a better forward.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they have other guys, and they were able to be a little bit more picky and be able to hold out a little bit more for those reasons. So maybe a little bit different in that regard. It's just he's 31, man. An 8-year deal at $8 million a year to a 31-year-old, to me, you're asking for trouble down the road. But the fact of the matter is, we see general managers doing this all the time. GMs sign players to deals that they know they're probably not going to be around to see the end of. Like, the chances that Peter Chiarelli is around in Edmonton to see the tail end of the Milan Lucic deal, if he is, it's because they've won something in the first 3 years when the deal and the money made sense. And so if he's around for the end of the Lucic deal, it's because something has happened that has allowed him to they've won something. So is some success now, even though you're mortgaging some of the future. And that's, GMs are doing these deals all the time now, where it's, hey, they're basically closing their eyes and hoping for the last half of the deal. But if it gets something done in the first half, then they've accomplished something.
Ryan Rashog.
And that's what this deal is.
Yeah, Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Brent Burns signed an 8-year deal today with the San Jose Sharks. I know there have been a lot of people, oh, geez, the Oilers will go after Brent Burns. I was like, and I never thought Brent Burns was ever getting to free agency, and I never thought the Oilers were going to land him anyway. I understand.
Well, I thought they would have had a chance. For sure they would. He's got a relationship with Todd McClellan. If Brent Burns decided he wanted to go to free agency, if he just decided he wanted to for whatever reason, and I don't know what's going on in his world, I don't know what's going on in his life. He very easily could have been going to free agency for all we knew. We don't know what his family situation is. Maybe he sees the writing on the wall with Thornton and Marlowe and doesn't like what's left. And who knows where his head is at? I mean, they put $8 million over 8 years on the table for him. Had they not done that, he could have very well been going to free agency. So I'm not quite with you on the whole deal that this was absolutely, everyone knew this was going to happen. I was very interested to see, excuse me, where Brent Burns was headed as far as free agency goes.
Yeah, I look at Doug Wilson's track record. I've never seen him lose a player he didn't want to lose. So some would say he overpaid, but we can make an argument that in the majority of the most contracts, the majority anyway, unless they're signed by Swedish defensemen who are 23 years of age, it seems that any long-term contract usually is the one that most people consider an overpayment at the time. So that, to me, is not a big shock in my books, and especially the San Jose Sharks. Brent Burns is arguably the most popular player in San Jose right now. He is their MVP on that team when you look at the age of Thornton and everybody else. And so I understand why they signed him, and it makes perfect sense, because if you don't have elite defensemen, you don't have a chance to win ultimately in this league. And now the Edmonton Oilers, they don't have a dominant number one Brent Burns defenseman yet, but they have a few they think maybe can morph into that. And one guy who had a little bit of a slow start offensively, who has really come on as of late, just shooting the puck. And I know he had one game where he missed the net, but really that was an anomaly when you look at his other games as far as missing the net in Oscar Klefbom this season, And, you know, Klefbom's now starting to score. And it's funny, his offense has, because you and I talked about this last week, he wasn't playing great defensively, but now that he's scored, his overall game looks way better. He has way more confidence even in the defensive zone.
Well, I think you've got a player who's relaxed a little bit. He normally has a really good, he's really good at putting pucks in from the blue line and getting them close to the net or on net. There's an aggressiveness that he shoots with. And he did tail away from that a little bit for a few games. And I think he had the one game where he missed the net 7 times. And it was almost like that something clicked in or it was a bit of a wake-up call or something, because he's been much better since then. He's been putting pucks on net and he's been scoring some goals. But I think more than anything, he's probably just relaxed and got a little bit of an injection of confidence. And when you're dealing with the number of games that Klefbom has played in the NHL, which through the life of a defenseman is still not that many, confidence is still very much an issue. I mean, he needs to put together 30 or 40 good, solid games where he's playing at a high level, because that's not something that he's had the opportunity to do. So, yeah, confidence is going to come and go. And right now he has confidence. He's playing like he has confidence. And I think another thing that matters is I think his partner has improved and gotten better too. I think Larson's been really good lately and really is coming into his game. To me, he has been so good just defensively, physically, strength-wise. I think both of them are getting better together.
Last night, pretty solid effort all around for the Edmonton Oilers. And unlike a few times earlier this year, they took advantage of a team playing their third game in 4 nights.
Well, and like we talked about earlier in the year, good teams take advantage of soft spots on their schedule. And not that Chicago would ever be a soft spot on the schedule, but they were vulnerable because of what their schedule looked like. So they roll into town tired, beat up, and maybe a team that if you get up early on, you can suck the will out of a little bit because they're going to be zapped. And so Edmonton, they come out, and they almost gave one up early, and bang, Cam Talbot is there. Makes a great save, couple of really nice saves early in that game to give his chance a team to stay in it and not fall behind and have the old here-we-go-again thing happen. So he was sharp early on, and then the offense gets flowing. And the man advantage, special teams was really good, made the difference for them, essentially scoring 3 power play goals on the night. It was just another one of those really – it was a test because it was who it was. It's Chicago. Regardless, that's always going to be a test. And so if you look at some of their big, big tests this year, whether it's Washington, St. Louis, Chicago, they've passed a few of them, and this was definitely another one where they passed with flying colors.
A fun situation, well, fun might be the right wrong word, but a good situation to be in when your team's playing so well that 2 veterans on your forward group you likely can't put into the lineup on Wednesday night because no one played bad enough to come out.
Well, what do you do there? Because, I mean, Pouliot, for the money he makes, and where he fits into that lineup, I mean, he should be an everyday guy. So you pull him out punitively to punish him because he hasn't been playing well enough and hasn't been doing enough to get himself out of it. And then you play a good game and win and everybody plays well. Well, you leave him out again and you win and everybody plays well. I don't know who you pull out of the lineup. I mean, you need Hendricks in there for his penalty killing. The guy dove in front of a shot with 5 seconds left in a 5-0 game, for goodness sakes. You're not going to pull him out of the lineup. Slapyshev bangs in a goal. So, I mean, he's got it going right now and looks decent. He's skating well. Puljujarvi's on the top flipping line. You got Pitlick, who's been scoring, he's got 6 goals on the season already, and he's got 6 goals on the season playing under 10 minutes a game. So his value is there. There's nowhere in the lineup. Maybe you could look at Cassian potentially, but he's bounced back after that penalty-filled night. I just don't know how you get Pouliot in. Cassian, to me, is the only option that might make any sense.
Well, even then, I don't like. To me, Cassian played fine last night, and outside of one unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, I don't think there's been anything to criticize about Cassian's play for 20 games, right? Like, the difference is you're taking Cassian out for a guy who has been scoreless in 11 games.
Yeah, for sure. But at the same time, sometimes unfair stuff happens because of politics isn't the right word, but because people are who they are, right? Like, Benoit Pouliot is an important player to this team. He makes a lot of money and should be an everyday guy. So while I get you don't want to change a winning lineup, and maybe he'll fall victim to that. I mean, if Todd McClellan, I don't think, intended to scratch the guy for three straight games. I think he wanted to send a message with a healthy scratching, and then you get him back in there. The problem was Kajula came in and played really well. Hendricks looked good. Pitlick scores. So he just couldn't get him in. But I don't think they're just going to let this player swing out there game after game after game. They do have to get him back in. And sometimes things that maybe aren't the most fair or make the most sense happen in a line. It's like when a team loses a game and the fourth line was really good, but they want to shake it up, so they sub a fourth liner out for a different fourth liner. Sometimes stuff like that happens. So I won't be shocked if they throw Pouliot in and pull Cassian out, because they need Ben. And Todd McClellan says, we need Benoit Pouliot, and Zach's been playing well, and he'll get an opportunity. Cassian doesn't have to be an everyday guy. Pouliot needs to get back in there. So we'll see how Todd handles it. That's the problem, though. When you don't take care of your own business, you never know when you're going to get another chance. And that's the problem with Pouliot not taking care of his business, is you get pulled out, and, well, now you're kind of left without a place to sit. And unless someone's going to do you a solid and just get you in, he could be waiting a while.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree that, you know, Pouliot has to be an everyday guy. I know you could look at contract sign, but we all know, Ryan, we talk about the politics of the business of it. Peter Shirelli didn't sign Benoit Pouliot, nor did Todd McClellan. And I think Todd McClellan, if the GM gives you the players and says, okay, here's your roster, I think it's up to the coach. And I'm not sure the coach always has to worry about, well, this guy's making this much, this guy's only making a quarter of his, so we have to play him. Because even if we look at minutes played this year, it hasn't been that way. And because I think Todd McClellan's really trying to create a chemistry is the wrong word, but a situation in the room where the guys who are playing the best get to play regardless of contracts.
Yes, I think he's trying to set that standard. I mean, I don't think Cassian was lights out last game. And so there comes a point where you do have to manage, your people and manage your assets too. I'm not sure where that pendulum will swing or what tips it, but there will come a point where they go, okay, we're gonna lose Benoit Pouliot in a way we don't necessarily want to lose Benoit Pouliot if we keep having him swinging out there.
Now, you think if he sits out, like let's say it's one more game and they lose, right, or they win, that you think that suddenly Pouliot, if he doesn't play Wednesday, taps out more than because it's an extra 48 hours?
Well, no, I'm not sure. I don't know what he's going to do, but what happens if you don't play him and then you win again? So that's great. But just because you continue to win doesn't mean you can just disregard other stuff that's going on, right? I mean, with certain players, you can. If it's Anton Lander we're talking about, if it's Mark Letestu we're talking about, I think you can. But different players, whether it's fair or not, have different importance in the lineup and different impact on the lineup based on their contracts. And so I think Todd does have to manage this. And I'm not sure when he steps in and goes, okay, I know we don't want to mess with the winning lineup, but we got to get Pouliot back in. He's an important part of the team, and he has to get back in. So it's nothing against Zach. It's just he's going to sit for a game. We got to get Benoit back in there. I don't think anybody would be going, holy smokes, that's insane, that's ridiculous. I understand he's got assets to try and manage. Now, that's up to Todd to figure out where that line is. One more game, two more games, three more games. What if they go on a bit of a run, and now you've got Pouliot who hasn't played in 2 weeks, and now you've kind of lost the player, and you have to manage the situation. It's not just as simple as winning, you're in.
So I just want to wrap up quickly. So you're saying you want to run Cassian out of town and get Pouliot in the lineup for Wednesday. Is that right? Am I reading that right?
Yeah, that accurately summarizes.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Majority's just taking
retire,
the... Yeah, Brett Burns
well.
Is terrible. He's brutal. Right? He's done at 33, and Cassian should be out. So quickly, no. Will there be a lineup change tomorrow, yes or no? What's your guess?
I think Todd will let him sit for one more game.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he'll let him sit for one more game. I don't think he'll push it to four.
Yeah, a 5-0 shutout's just really hard to finger point at someone and say, okay, you know, unless there was some sort of tweaking of an injury, that's the only way I would say it.
But I didn't see Cassian is so good the other night that it would be just this unbelievable decision if they decided to sub get Pouliot
okay.
in there.
I just didn't see any bad penalties. I didn't see any egregious errors. Right, he might not have stood out, but he also didn't stand out negatively, right? So that's why, to me, he's probably, I think he'll stay in for one more game because it was 5-0. And then you're right, depending on what happens Wednesday, it'll become a fun decision. But it's, you know what? It's a problem. The Oilers have had depth problems for years. It's just never been like one of having too much depth. It was usually not having enough. So
yeah, they got a second line left winger that can't find a spot in the lineup. That's a good problem to have. And the reason for it is because Slepyshev's been good. Pitlick has been good. Kujula came in and has been good. Drysdale's been good. Puljujarvi's been playing well. So it's a good problem to have. But it doesn't mean that you don't have to manage the situation. And Todd is going to have to at some point here.
Shira, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
All right, buddy. Take care.